Who is Mickey? On February 9th, 2020, at the Oscars, Mickey was introduced to the world. She was representing a 2019 South Korean film that follows the story of the Kim family, who insidiously starts working for a wealthier Park family. One by one, they posed as unrelated and highly qualified individuals. As the Kims become increasingly entwined in the lives of Parks, tensions rise, and a series of unexpected events leads to a shocking and violent death. Parasite was an uncomfortable movie to watch, filled with sudden mood shifts that the director Bong Joon-ho was famous for. Bong had directed fairly popular movies such as Snowpiercer and Okja, but Parasite? It was the first film not in the English language to win Best Picture in 92 years.
And the Oscar goes to Parasite.
At the end of their thank you speech, the lights dimmed to a roaring crowd of celebrities that shouted, "Up, up, up," over and over again. Even Tom Hanks was throwing his two hands into the sky as the crowd insisted for the lights to return. The peer pressure finally got to the organizers as the lights turned on, revealing Mickey, a spunky lady, almost a head shorter than everyone else, smiling widely.
Hi, everybody. I really like to thank Director Bong. Thank you.
But while her statue was short, the energy that exuberated from her felt enormous as she spoke directly to the crowd. She proceeds to thank the director, the cast, operations team, and every Parasite watcher at home. She then thanked her brother, Jay, who according to Mickey, had supported their team.
I'd like to thank my brother, who's been always supporting our building our dreams, even when it looked impossible dream.
That day, the world thought much of Parasite and felt energized meeting the happy 62-year-old Mickey. But few knew the connection. Mickey, or Mi Kyung Lee, was the grandniece of Lee Byung-chul, or BC, and formerly part of the Samsung Empire. Formerly, because the death of BC led to a family feud that would tear the business into four separate entities, each becoming their own empires over time. Mickey would fall under the CJ Corporation, a conglomerate that eventually became one of the largest media companies in South Korea with tendrils all over Hollywood. And yet, CJ would still pale in comparison besides the main body of Samsung, which makes over 6 times the revenue of the entire CJ Corporation combined. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Fracturing the Celestial Body. CJ Corporation is part of a broader history within Samsung's convoluted past that birthed 4 separate empires. They are the Seihan, Hansol, Shinsegae, and CJ Group. Of the 4, the 2 largest is Shinsegae, which is viewed as a retail chaebol, and CJ, a media chaebol. The 4 entities' inception was part of a cruel family feud that erupted as BC's Samsung Empire grew too big, aided by the then president, Park Chun-hee, in 1961. At the time, Samsung was a mishmash of companies from food and wool production to insurance and retail, which revolved around a bank. Samsung's unique structure was driven by BC's belief in diversifying and mirroring the dynastic businesses that run Japan. Through careful political partnerships, he had accumulated wealth and power, both of which made him a target for Park Chun-hee. President Park, also known as General Park, had led a military coup that took over the current administration.
수만 가지고 미중의 언제 어떻게 생긴지 모르는 사이에.
Born educated but poor, he joined the military and ended up working closely with the Japanese who occupied Korea. Having witnessed the trading influence of the very same dynastic empires that BC admired, he recognized that while these large enterprises may drive economic development, they needed to be leashed by the government. And today, in May 1961, he was going to leash Samsung. The fresh summer rain was pouring out of the pitch-black night sky as BC headed into a jeep. Guided by a young Korean man, he prayed that they would drive him to a hotel rather than a prison cell. BC had returned to Korea from Japan to plead his case to General Park. It was widely known that many businessmen were already in prison cells, an obvious sign that General Park meant business.
Oh, thank God,
BC might have exclaimed as the jeep turned into a hotel. Tonight, at least, he would be safe.
BC-nim,
the young man said,
tomorrow we'll fetch you again.
Where to?
To the Supreme Council for National Reconstruction.
Oh, God,
BC might have thought, as he knew full well that the Supreme Council was stacked with like-minded people as General Park. His days seemed numbered as he headed to bed. BC got off the jeep and was escorted by a team working with General Park. As he passed by the secretary's office, he entered a room with a stout man wearing black glasses. Instantly, he knew that was General Park, the new dictator of South Korea and the only man who could spare him prison time. Despite a room full of people, it was unnaturally quiet. Not even a breath was heard as BC quietly shuffled in to meet his maker.
You can say anything, General Park commanded. So talk without reservations.
Devoid of any pleasantries and without any introduction at all, BC must have felt his future slipping away. He knew his strength was in relationship building, but with General Park, it would seem it would be purely business. Nonetheless, he pleaded his case.
No, I think the people will not accept what you said,
General Park interrupted as he gazed upwards with a light smile. BC recognized that face. It's the face of a man who already made up his mind.
BC, I know what you're building over here with Samsung. I've seen the Japanese keiretsus.
General Park was referring to a type of Japanese company structure that consists of many business units revolving around the financing of a bank. These companies would own shares of each other, deal with each other, and continue expanding with the aid of bank leverage.
Now, BC, I want you to know that I hate these company structures. I hate how they accumulate wealth, power, and I hate how they would eventually strangle nations.
BC might have been praying for a miracle.
But I do not hate you, at least not yet. Tell me, do you want to continue building Samsung?
BC couldn't believe it. It seemed that he might have his way out.
Of course, we'll do anything. Yes. You must. From now onwards, Samsung will be inextricably tied to our nation's progress. You can still become rich, but only if South Korea prospers. Starting tomorrow, we'll take ownership of your banks, and you'll pay the administration $4.4 million for all the trouble you've caused. Is that agreeable?
BC could sense it was a rhetorical question, but nonetheless, he was relieved.
A grim future is better than no future, he might have thought.
Over the course of the next few years, General Park, who then became President Park, had forced the Chaebols to serve the government by stripping them of any ready financial supply. They would depend on the government for lifelines, which were only given if they hit manufacturing quotas. If any business fell behind, it would pull out state funding and force the Chaebol to flirt with the prospects of bankruptcy. His expert command of these business empires became a trigger point in history that was dubbed the Miracle on the Han River, a period of growth that raised South Korea's GDP per capita by over 200 times from 1960 to today. A huge reason was the export-driven mentality that forced Chaebols to sell outwards and bring funding inwards. It also turned its people into the nation's comparative advantage by investing heavily in skills, education, and knowledge. President Park's relationship with BC eventually evolved, and by the end of the year, the Chaebols had been organized into a lobbying group called the Federation of Korean Industry. Together with the administration, they would hold high-level talks to align their business and the regime, while negotiating against heavy-handed government intervention. Under President Park's leadership, he would inextricably link the Chaebol's success with South Korea, forcing them to bring the economy up as they grew. In return, he also enacted policies that protected South Korean businesses, which is why, despite how globalized Korea might seem, almost all the main providers tend to be Korean companies. But unbeknownst to the general, the Chaebols were shifting the ground beneath him. Most of all, BC, who decided if Samsung were to succeed, they would need more control. His intentions that day would lead to a grand dynastic fallout that would birth Samsung Electronics. It's 1966, and Samsung were in President Park's good graces. 18 months ago, they had agreed to build a fertilizer plant, the first of its kind that could enable large-scale sustainable agriculture. It was also somewhat a declaration to the world that South Korea is going big, since the plant would have 330,000 tons of capacity, the world's largest at the time. A lot seemed to be riding on this project. As such, Samsung, the largest Chaebol, was awarded the contract. To fund the project, the government tapped on a mixture of Japanese reparation from World War II and American payment for Korean troops sent to the Vietnam War. In other words, the government tapped on hard-won money from the blood of their own people, which made the project ever more patriotic. It took Samsung 18 long months, but finally, in the coastal city of Ulsan, the factory was ready. It was a symbolic moment where old and new, nature and man were in perfect harmony. You would see spring mists floating across the landscape mixed with ammonia clouds. By the fields would be Korean farmers wearing traditional costumes and government officials in Western-style uniforms. But very quickly, things seemed to fall apart. The 330,000 tons of production was falling short, which triggered an explosive investigation. As it turns out, Lee Chang-hee, BC's second son and heir apparent, had sold chemicals brought into the country to a saccharin processing firm, a type of artificial sweetener. The factory built on South Korean blood had been a massive scandal, and parliamentary proceedings immediately spiraled out of control. "Eat this saccharin," screamed an opposition lawmaker in court as he threw a can of human excrement. As authorities cleaned up the mess, BC and his son, Lee Chang-hee, were brought in again for questioning. The evidence that poured out pointed Chang-hee definitively as the culprit. "Your verdict, Chang-hee, will be out tomorrow," the judge might have spoken, before ending the day's meeting. At the back, the real discussions of Chang-hee's verdict was about to happen, and it involved BC's plea for leniency. As it turns out, BC wasn't as valuable as he thought. Under President Park's request, he was forced to surrender 51% of the fertilizer plant and step down from chairmanship in order to bring his son's sentence to 5 years. This would be one of many economical negotiations that President Park's regime brought, whereby white-collar crime could have reduced sentences as long as they served the state's economy.
It would be taken to extremes, and today, some 50% of the heads of the top 10 chaebol have been found guilty of criminal offenses. And yet, each of them has received a presidential pardon, frequently without spending time in jail.
To be fair, President Park never intended it to be abused, but his regime provided precedent that allowed many chaebol heads to benefit from it. Back in the courthouse, BC reluctantly agreed and handed the Samsung reins over to Lee Meng-hee, his first son. At that time, Samsung was a force to be reckoned with. They had recently acquired TBC, which would eventually merge with KBS, Korea's largest national broadcaster, and also acquired Shinsegae, which would become one of the largest retail chaebols in the future. But more importantly, it had established the Central Times in 1965, a Korean news outlet modeled after Japan's daily papers. It was one of the biggest news outlets then, and today as part of the Big Three. The Central Times was the tongue of Samsung, and it enabled them to have a voice whenever they needed. But in 1966, there was little excitement over power as Samsung fell into disarray, because Lee Meng-hee, the first son, was known to be a troublemaker. The fractures in the family were showing, which would soon spread all across Samsung. Just 6 months later, BC was right to be reluctant. Stories started emerging all over Samsung about Lee Meng-hee's erratic behavior.
Did you hear? He fired a Browning rifle in front of Samsung executives. No, I heard he shot at a Samsung security guard. I heard a better one. He made the CEO of the Central Times kneel before him.
BC couldn't ignore the rumors any longer and returned to chairmanship. The first prince of the Samsung Empire was officially relegated. Across his life, there would be many rumors about him, some personally claimed in his own biography, which made his real exile seem pre-planned. But regardless of the stories, it's commonly agreed that the first prince of Samsung had finally lost his mind after BC announced in 1967 that the Samsung company would now fall to Lee Kun-hee, his third son. It was 1968, and Samsung was still a powerhouse. While the Lee family turmoil had disrupted their rocket ship growth, they still managed to launch a paper company in 1967. But this year, something peculiar was happening. Japan was experiencing a technological revolution, and a new company was coming on top, Sony. In the past few years, President Park's administration had observed that Sony hadn't just put Japan on the map. It had dominated the television and radio industry in America, a country thought untouchable by Asian power. Luckily, Samsung's BC was also observing the shift happen, and both President Park and Samsung approached Sanyo, which is now owned by Panasonic after an earthquake crippled the company. But in November 1968, Sanyo was a powerhouse and credited for advancing the technology for batteries and TV. Through a trade deal that was assumed to benefit Sanyo, the founder of Sanyo agreed to become BC's advisor and to train his team. Things moved rapidly, and on December 30th, 1968, Samsung started a new corporation, Samsung Sanyo Electronics, which recruited and trained 137 employees. Over time in 1970, NEC Corporation, Japan's major producer of telecommunications equipment, heard of the deal and soon partnered with Samsung as well. This partnership model seemed to form the playbook for how Samsung would operate in the future, especially with microwaves, TV, and eventually the smartphone. Through funding or services rendered, Samsung would learn a single component of a final product, then become a supplier, before learning about the entire product to become a competitor. Build, supply, learn, compete. A potent strategy that would prove effective during the Sony and Apple wars to come. Eventually, Samsung Sanyo Electronics became Samsung Electronics, the crown jewel of the Samsung Empire. Lee Chang-hee, the second eldest son of BC, was sitting in his prison cell, counting down the minutes. He had heard the announcement by his father that his younger brother, Kun Hee, would be managing Samsung.
"He doesn't have the balls to do it. He's a recluse,"
muttering under his breath as he laid down thinking. In South Korea, prison is often designed to hold six people. But for the rich and famous, it's a one-person facility.
"Father is going to give me back the reins of Samsung, and I'll run it more cautiously this time,"
he might have thought.
"Yeah, Father is going to welcome me back with open arms."
Upon release, he was greeted by a chauffeur that sent him home, where he was awaiting a leader's welcome.
"Father, I'm back,"
Chang-hee called.
"Yes, son, welcome back,"
BC might have replied. Seated around the table was BC and his younger brother, Kun Hee, who was quiet.
"So father, I heard about our electronics business. It sounds interesting. I've got a few ideas." "Maybe you should rest,"
BC interrupted. A sense of dread was falling down on Chang Hee. Where was his welcome back? So Chang Hee pressed on.
"It's okay, I'm well rested. I've got ideas for your temporary successor, Kun Hee."
"It's not temporary."
"What do you mean?" "I mean, it's permanent. Kun Hee is the successor." "No, he can't lead. I've been the best entrepreneur in the family. You know that." "Sure, I mean I made a mistake, but I will be cautiously growing—" "That's the problem. Your dreams, Chang Hee, your dreams are too small for Samsung. You broad over the tiny details and operate on a small scale."
Chang-hee couldn't believe it. This is ridiculous. No matter his weaknesses, surely his reclusive younger brother was not the better choice.
"I can dream big, father. I mean, I do dream big. I just haven't told you." "Enough. You're out."
Chang-hee's blood was boiling. Slowly walking towards the door, he paused right before opening it.
"Father, you're going to regret this. The entire family is going to regret this."
That day, Chang-hee couldn't sleep, plagued by the belief that he was better at running the company, yet forcefully turned into the company jester by his own father. He decided enough was enough. Days later, an anonymous letter was sent to the only man who seemed to be able to put BC in his place, President Park. And in the letter, provided damning details of a slush fund and possibly some mention of saccharin. The letter sparked a schism as both the second son, Chang-hee, and the first son, Meng-hee, began blaming each other. The air of deceit and uncertainty would spread across the entire Samsung group, which left BC with few options but to break the Samsung empire into four separate companies, excluding Samsung Electronics. CJ, which started as a sugar processing plant and became a movie chaebol, was given to BC's eldest son, Lee Meng-hee. Shinsegae, the largest departmental store chain, was given to his younger daughter, Lee Myung-hee. The Hansol, which became Korea's largest paper production, was given to his eldest daughter, Lee In-hee. And the rest that is Sehan to Lee Chang-hee. Through the chaos, the quiet Lee Kun-hee, BC's third son, seemed more appropriate to run the business simply by elimination, which sparked uncertainty within Samsung Electronics executive. The greatest crown jewel had fallen onto his unproven lap, a lucky heir that they must now work with. And initially it might seem so. Lee Kun-hee would grow up in Samsung making many mistakes, but as the world would soon know, he was not just a lucky heir. He would soon grow to become the man credited for transforming Samsung Electronics into the global behemoth that it is today. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Fracturing the Celestial Body. Next, in Empires, we'll learn the influence that Kun Hee exerted as Samsung ushers in a new generation of leaders that would conquer the world. Follow us so you won't miss out on episode 3 of our 5-part series, The Power of the Sun. Empires is a 1UP Media original, produced and edited by Gwang Jin, audio experience by Ethan Sam, and narrated by Peter Ng. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.